Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Andy Dunn is here in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Joe.
Much appreciated. And Keith Wood, you are on the line.
I am on the line. How are you, Joe?
Very well. Great form. So Ireland down 1-0 and looking to win a first ever series from being 1-0 down. And kickoff in Melbourne is 11:05 Irish time. And unfortunately for Australians, it's exactly the same time that they kick off in the World Cup against France. So that is unfortunate timing, to say the least. But they have sold 28,000 tickets in Melbourne. It's a 30,000 capacity stadium. So I saw Keith in the course of his comments to the media this week, Andy Farrell, one of the things he said was, I think there's a realisation in the camp that we deserve to win and that hurts. Did Ireland deserve to win? Was that your sense?
I'm not sure. I thought it was, for me, it was a good test match. Looked tough, was difficult. I thought Australia played pretty well. I thought they were very efficient at times. I think we should have won. Maybe it's probably more than we deserve to win. I felt with the quality of bench that we had, you'd like them to come and finish the job. And we didn't. We didn't finish stronger. We were the weaker of the two teams finishing.
Which was quite surprising, really. When you saw Sexton and the Cavalry come on at 9 points to 8 up, you thought, OK, they'll steer this home.
Yeah, and I thought Ireland had played well with the changes in the personnel. I thought Carberry had a fine game. Some of the senior players, we didn't play as well. Struggled a little bit defensively. I don't know whether that was a system failure that we were to rush up in that stage, but Robbie Henshaw got kind of lost in that defending that 13 channel, which we keep saying is the most difficult. And I don't know whether that was what was happening inside or whether we had become a little bit narrow. But Australia's width put us under pressure. Rob Kearney, who has had a season of seasons, was just a little bit off kilter. Even some of the tackles he made, he's still making them on the wrong side. You know, you're getting kind of half smashed doing it. I just thought we were going to not up the gears, because the guys are pretty tired, but I still thought we'd Sexton would come on and steer the team home, and that there'd be the energy at the end, and we didn't really have it.
Andy, your take on Carberry, first of all. You've been a man professionally in a number 10 jersey. Joe Schmidt was keen to point out it is his first ever big tier one test match start. Schmidt used the word pretty solid, really, was what he said about Carberry.
Yeah, I thought it was a debut he could probably look back on with, I suppose he'd be relatively pleased. My concern, it's an ongoing thing with Joey. I'm delighted he's got an opportunity at 10. I'm not so delighted that it seems it's not acceptable for him to be a little bit impulsive and be his natural player. It's as if he ought to be a ready-made game manager in the mould of Johnny Sexton, and it's not going to suit him. He's not that type of guy yet. He's only 22.
Can he become that type of guy very soon?
Well, I think he can become a game manager in his own way. I mean, Beauden Barrett can manage a game in a very different way to Johnny Sexton can. So I think Joey may learn to manage a game his way, and that can be through by being a greater threat, maybe as a runner himself. He's obviously pretty strong in that area. But
does that type of management suit a Joe Schmidt side?
Not at the moment, no. So it looks like Joe's going to try, I would imagine, to kind of cut the edges off him a bit and make him a bit more of a company man. And you know, but the thing I love about Joey is that there's not many rugby players out there who can do what he can do in terms of just innate ability. What I liked was he managed to get through the game, and we were 9-8 up when he came off the field. I would have loved to have seen him nail that kick, because that's what gives the boys up front, the likes of Woody climbing up off a ruck, seeing that, you know, tired, and seeing that penalty sail through, that's a key moment for him. But the thing I didn't like in the game was that he played away from the game line, even like Johnny Sexton has learnt in latter years to be a huge threat on the gain line himself. He is. And so too is Joey. But I think when you're told to manage a game and be an executive at 22, you're going to retreat a bit and your natural game is going to go in. He kind of went into himself a bit and he was no longer much of a threat. He actually was just the second scrum half at times, just feeding the ball to guys outside him. And his first, I remember clearly his first start for Leinster in a European game, he beat 11 defenders himself.
And but does this have anything to do with, well, okay, certainly there's the occasion. And it must go through his head.
Absolutely.
Okay, this is your first chance here. Big deal. Don't screw up, whatever you do. Like a 7 out of 10 performance is just fine. And secondly,
absolutely.
I mean, it did seem like the Australians were rifling up at Ireland every time they had the ball. So was Joey almost retreating because of that as much as anything?
Yeah, I think a little from column A and column B. I think 7 out of 10. Given the pressure, given the intensity of their defence, given the situation, given what was asked of him, or what is seems to be, it's what's being asked of him regularly is, you know, he's what we heard coming out of the camp. He's talking a lot more than he used to. He's that type of. I'm not sure if he's that type of guy. He could he be a quiet and authoritative 10 by running a game? Perhaps he can be, but 7 out of 10, you're going to take every day of the week in that situation. I'm not being critical. I just think he is actually. Got potential to be a really superb 10 in just a slightly different way. And I sometimes hesitate to think, well, you know, why does everyone have to be like Johnny? You know, we're very one-dimensional in our thought process about 10s.
Keith, do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, I do. There was a couple of things in that. One was he said, I'm very... slow to hesitate. You actually hesitated. I thought it was like a picturesque pause. I thought it was fantastic, right? But apart from that, actually, it's funny. I look at it as a forward in different ways. I would want a young 10 to grow into the game. He definitely took the ball further behind the gain line and passed it rather than challenging it. I think that's an acceptable way to ease yourself into international rugby. I remember when Paddy Jackson came on the scene at the very, very start, he ended up taking the ball back about 15 yards because he was under so much pressure. Joey didn't do that at all. He was still taking it further up, but he just wasn't challenging it as often as he could have. But as a forward, I would want my 10 to get into the game. I would want him to do the right things right. And I would want to know that when the opportunity arises, he's able to do something else. And like you mentioned Beauden Barrett there, Beauden Barrett manages the game himself incredibly well. He's very, very quick. He waits and bides his time before he has a cut because he's a lot of experience to be able to do so. Joey still hasn't played a huge number of games at 10. So that makes it very difficult to make that huge... It's like a jump from, you know, from All-Ireland League to international rugby almost for the amount that he has played at 10. So he's come on and done a job when he hasn't had to think about it coming off the bench. This is one with huge pressure coming from the start. I don't think you can overestimate how difficult that actually is. So I would have been very happy with him. But I would hold back on some of the reservations just yet, Andy, just to say that, yeah, he's got his way in. That's great. He's going to get a chance to be playing 10 in Munster. He'll play a lot more games, one hopes. We'll get him to see him grow and the confidence and to understand where he can be in the field. But I'd also say that in 12 and 13 last Saturday didn't play at the standard that they have played earlier on in the year. Now, whether that's in factor because they've a young 10 beside them that they don't really know or trust that well, or because they haven't been playing together for a couple of years, or because some are coming back and are rusty from injury. So I don't, at times it isn't exactly like with like. It can't just be a young 10 who's making all the calls. It has to be other guys outside him. And I can tell you for Rog, I think when he started, which has gone back a long time now, Rog was very, very quiet. I mean, incredibly quiet. Hard to think of now. But he was the quietest guy. But he had Kevin Maggs outside him in Ireland, or Rob Henderson, two guys who just wouldn't shut up. Now, they might say the same thing often, which was give him the ball, and they'd take it up short and do whatever. Or you'd have Dricko on the outside. They talked a lot. So because he didn't talk a huge amount, you have to rely on other people to do it until you grow into it. I still think it's pretty stunning the amount of rugby at 10 he's played in the last 12 months. And we're, you know, you've put him up to a fairly high light very, very quickly. So well, I'm happy. I'm happy he came through the game unscathed. And I mean that mentally as much as physically.
Yeah.
And was able to deliver. Yeah.
I don't have reservations about his ability, and nor am I suggesting I was disappointed in how he played on Saturday. I actually, that, as Joe mentioned, like a 7 out of 10 you take every day of the week.
Correct.
And I think Joey would be very, very satisfied, and so would Joe Schmidt. What I feel is that I'd like to see the part of his game being allowed to develop that's instinctive and innate, and I'm not sure will it be allowed to develop if he's been entrusted with responsibilities that aren't suitable necessarily for a 22-year-old with not that much game time at 10. That's where I was coming from. I think the like devolution of responsibility, the likes of Conor Murray to take more off Joey's plate when he plays with him, that'll probably evolve with Munster. Yeah. I think the centre's taking it a bit more. I mean, James Ryan as a second row has not been asked to come in and call all the lineouts. He's been allowed to come into the game, and he's shown what incredible strength, ability, athleticism he has in 22 professional games, but he's not been given this all-encompassing role and responsibility that everybody seems to throw on a 10 just because you're a 10.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that, no doubt. There's other pieces of news you want to hit on. The team has leaked as it tends to, is the way now. So Rob Kearney seems to be at fullback. Keith Earls, if he comes through as HIA, will resume on the wing. Jacob Stockdale will as well. So just one change in the centres. Ringrose comes in, Aki looks like he's going out, and Henshaw reverts to 12. And then we'll have Johnny Sexton back in, we'll have Conor Murray, and then front row is Keane Healy, Cronin, Tyke Furlong, Devon Toner alongside James Ryan, and then we'll have a back row which will include Peter O'Mahony, Dan Levy, and CJ Stander. So it's about as full strength as we're going to see. So there's various aspects here. Keith, you can pick what's the most important. Levy and the impact he's going to try and have on Pocock and Hooper, and just the breakdown generally. And then Farrell as well today was talking about Ireland physically, and he was just kind of wondering, you know, were we quite where we have been in the past? And we did kind of bully teams across the Six Nations, and that was how moves tended to start, which was not the case at the weekend. So that whole area seems like it's going to be fairly decisive.
Well, I think if you look at the breakdown firstly, you're looking at the best proponents in world rugby playing against us, you know, and I think if we put our best seven there at it, we have an opportunity to slow down theirs and speed up ours, if at all possible, and you know, that becomes important. The physical element of it, I thought the game was an incredible test, and it was funny listening to some of the players saying it was about the fastest 20 or 30 minutes of rugby that they'd played. I have a lingering worry that our guys are just very tired because of Lions and everything that's happened since then. We've had huge success in Ireland with Leinster with their double, with Ireland with a Grand Slam. When you're in those finals and at the end, you're playing every game. You're playing every big game. Yeah. They all take something out of you. On the back of a Lions tour that was a shared tour, which was pretty amazing, they were playing to the last 80th minute. So it takes a lot out of them. I mean, some of the guys just look absolutely knackered. They want to go and play because they're proud and with the right level of pride. And they need to get a big game. But then there's another big game after. So I think picking the team how he did last week and how he is this week makes sense to me.
Does it?
We may not have got the result that we would have liked.
Interesting.
But it makes an awful lot of sense.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I guess it's a matter of opinion, isn't it? Eddie O'Sullivan was on a Monday, and one, he was absolutely dismissive of the fatigue notion and said, look, they're the best managed group in world rugby, arguably. And on the way we've gone about picking the team, both him and Maddie sort of felt, well, do you know what? The Aussies have had 6 days prep. Let's pick our best team because it's so difficult to win two on the bounce. And actually now we're a little bit behind the eight ball. We should have really gone after the first test and maybe rested guys in the middle. These are the issues that Joe Schmidt's trying to juggle, I suppose.
I think this is proper preparation for a World Cup. Sorry, Andy, you may have taken one of your hesitant breaks there. But I was in too quickly.
I was so pensive.
Andy, don't be so hesitant. Come on in.
But, you know, I think yes, it's important that we go and win a series on there. Of course it is. But it's more important that we have a bigger and broader squad when we play in a World Cup.
Yeah, so that's the priority.
For me, it absolutely has to be. We have proven over the last number of years we've won championships, we've won a Grand Slam. Mm. This is a pretty cracking Irish team that are able to beat the other teams in the Northern Hemisphere, that have managed to beat the teams in the Southern Hemisphere. We need a full depth of squad to try and have a proper tilt at a World Cup.
Because Andy, Joe Schmidt made the point, I've about 11 test matches between now and the World Cup. And he said, we all know what's around the corner in New Zealand come November, and then nobody's accepting me ditch the Six Nations, and suddenly here we are. So I've got 11 to work with, and this is maybe my lowest pressure environment. Although somebody has tweeted in, Stephen, if Ireland lose the series 3-0 or badly, does that affect World Cup preparations?
I think it affects, to a small extent, it might halt the momentum and some of the confidence levels that are there. But ultimately, it doesn't matter one jot, I don't think. I think if we lose 3-0 and gain something like a John Ryan, a Joey Carberry, who can step up to the plate in a World Cup quarter final in the event of injury, you'll take it. Mm. I think I fully agree that we need to put all our prep and focus into this World Cup.
Okay.
Given how good this Irish squad are, it's our greatest chance at going the furthest we can in the tournament. Nobody's going to sacrifice the Six Nations, but I wouldn't care, to be honest, about the overall score of the series.
We'll forget this series fairly quickly, I would think, come World Cup time. A question for you then, Andy, and Keith, feel free to come in as well, because this is also a key area. So John Rogers says he'll try and not wear his Connacht hat, and we know John, he's a regular tweeter. That Connacht hat is very green. But I'm surprised Aki has been dropped. The centre partnership was an issue on Saturday, but I would have thought Aki 12, Ringrose 13 would make most sense. Andy, you're 10. Who do you want outside you?
Probably on Saturday, Henshaw and Ringrose. I think Aki is, if anything, is an international 12 also. He doesn't have the gas to play international 13. I think that certainly showed up on occasion on Saturday. He got given the ball in a one-on-one setting twice, opposite his defender, and that's about as good as you can hope for with space outside the defender. And you want to at least try and get to that outside shoulder and cause doubt, but it wasn't happening on Saturday. He just doesn't have the speed, the out and out speed for that position to be effective at international level, Aki. So yeah, I mean, he could have moved into 12, but then you're dropping Henshaw, and I think Henshaw adds more value overall in terms of his distribution, his ability to carry. They're both similarly strong in defence. But
Henshaw was 13 on Saturday.
Aki played a lot in 13 in broken field.
They switched.
On a number of occasions.
Okay, so it's a bit like O'Driscoll and Darcy where they switched.
They switched a lot, and I think in those outside channels. So that's why he's thrown in, I think, Ringrose, and Henshaw moves in one in terms of a choice.
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely the right call.
Okay. And because, I mean, you mentioned Henshaw at the outset, Keith, and I don't know. I mean, Ringrose is a brilliant reader for sure of the game, and he showed that when he came in the Six Nations, and things seemed to improve dramatically defensively. But I don't feel comfortable with anybody in an Irish jersey shooting up at Kirtley Beale, because the guy's so damn good and has such brilliant hands.
That's fine, only that he was also very deep. So for me, that rushing up on him, he still had time to pass the ball.
Yeah.
So if you rush up, you have to catch man and ball. And that didn't happen, which means the timing is wrong, or looking at that system is wrong. You know, because Beale just looks really, really good at the moment. He looks very capable at the moment. We haven't talked about either that I think the refereeing over the whole weekend, I spent the whole weekend watching rugby. It was sunny in Killaloe. The pale skin is not able to take that sun. I know it's raining now, and I'm not really happy about that either. But I actually watched all of it. I thought some of the games were marred by inconsistency. And I thought there was a fair few elements where I'm looking at that game, scratching my head, saying, okay, I just don't get that. That's just been a little bit pedantic or not. You can actually have a look at that in a different way. You need to ask a different question for some of those. And then looking at the New Zealand-France one, which I thought was awful in terms of refereeing and in terms of strategy for referees. What to do in certain circumstances, definitely go upstairs. You know, just take, it's okay, we can have 30 seconds, we can cover that. I think we need to have a look at that at the moment, because there's games that are now being marred a little by poor refereeing.
And take the Australian game, which everybody was seeing, listening. What was the big issue in that one that jumped out at you?
Yeah, it was just the level of inconsistency on some of the calls. And it was looking at different elements. For me, some of the HIAs were just unbelievably too slow happening.
Mm.
And I don't know where that goes and who has to make that call. But when there's clashes of heads, I'm trying to watch this, looking at it comfortably and saying, yeah, he needs to go off. And suddenly he goes off 3 minutes later, but you've already had four phases of play.
Was this Keith Earls?
Keith Earls, and in the New Zealand game as well.
Right.
So, you know, at times you have to have a... They're the things when you see clashing of heads and guys down on the ground... Maybe that's the time to have a little look. Let's bang that upstairs. We just need to clear that now quickly. And some for even I wasn't certain whether CJ Stander got near to scoring that or not. Ultimately, I think he should have passed the ball, to be honest. That was a frustration for me. But there was a few. I'm trying to remember the absolute specifics in the Australia game.
Yeah.
But in the New Zealand game in particular, I was getting incredibly frustrated. Right, okay. Frustrated.
We'll keep an eye out this weekend then and come back to it maybe. So I presume you saw England then somehow go from, 24-3 up to 42-29? I was keeping an eye on this. I mean, once England were up by such a margin, I was doing different bits and pieces, and every time I looked up, there was a score. What the hell happened? And it's now four in a row. For Eddie Jones, although I saw an interview trying to tell him it was five in a row, including the Babas match, and Eddie nearly punched him, to be frank. So he's feeling the pressure.
He's under huge pressure. Reactions to different things happening, to losing a game from being in that position is tough. They've made the decision to stay at sea level for the whole lot, and there's arguments for and against that one. He also picked all his players in wrong positions. So full back on the wing at full back. I thought they looked in absolute total control. It was as good a 20 minutes of rugby as I've seen, that first 20 minutes. Everything that is good about England when they play well, they had three 10s at 10, 12 and 13 and looked so incredibly sharp, and then just fell apart. A couple of simple mistakes and they're fragile. That's one of the issues that they have at the moment.
Yeah,
fell apart to make so one mistake and then compound it.
It fell apart so badly that you thought it might actually be fatigue, or you know, the confidence is so brittle that it was compounded.
Well, I think they were elevated to such a height for a period of time, with all the victories that they had and back to back in the Six Nations. It hasn't happened since, and they have become uncertain. So in that position, they were very, very strong. And I have to say, I thought South Africa grew into the game. They looked and finished stronger, and altitude does definitely count in terms of that. It was a cracking atmosphere. It was a huge emotional day for South Africa because of the first ever black captain. I think there was a big emotional play for them, but I'd say they didn't know what was going on, how they could have got into the position where they'd win.
Yeah. Back to Saturday in Melbourne. So that's our Irish team. The Wallabies are unchanged. I mean, the other thing to state, they're a bloody good team. You know, like as last week we're talking and you're hearing people aren't that interested in rugby union as much and it's struggling a bit. I mean, this is still a great team to watch, and like so many attributes and so many brilliant players. So this is not going to be easy for Ireland, Andy, come Saturday at all. But that is pretty much our best foot forward. So how's this going to go?
Well, I think our guys have got that nice dissatisfaction with any kind of poor performance now. They're like an angry bunch of successful professionals, which wouldn't have been the case in our, historically speaking, we probably would have accepted, okay, a gallant, you go 1-0 down, let's give it our best shot. This group strike me as a really... you know, moody, angry, sullen type of group that are carrying themselves with a great level of frustration all through the week. And that seems to be what's coming out of the camp in the various sound bites I've heard. I think I would say there's 14 of the 15. I think in that selection, if that comes to pass, that Jacob Stockdale is very lucky to retain his place.
Really?
We tend to gloss over wing play, but he was heavily involved for you know, in a huge amount of ball, and he kicked away a lot of possession aimlessly. And I think his great strength is he's a finisher. He's a dynamic finisher. He's probably faster, bigger, and stronger than a lot of wingers we've had over the years. And our wingers have usually been, well, not as quick as other international wingers, but will do a tidy job for you. And there's a number of guys come to mind over the years. Stockdale seems to have broken that mould in the sense, okay, an electric finisher. But he was given the ball with work to do on Saturday on multiple occasions. And each time he was given the ball with work to do, he kicked it away aimlessly. His saving grace being a really outstanding cover tackle,
yes,
for on his opposite wing.
Yeah.
Showed great work, great courage, great technique. But I would have thought he's being pulled up on every one of those by the likes of Schmidt, Farrell, Richie Murphy, mm-hmm, and given a second chance because he's enough credit in the bank based on his first 9 tests with 11 tries.
Yeah.
But I think he's lucky to keep his place.
Okay, interesting. Keith, final thoughts on Saturday then?
Yeah, I was uncertain last week. I thought we had a good chance to win, but I wouldn't have gone out and said, yeah, I'm going to put money on. I would tip us for a win this week. I think this is a different looking Irish team. This is the one that knows how to win and knows how to get into a winning position, and hopefully pick up enough of points along the way. I think we need our kicking out of hand to be far, different. We can't be highlighting the one man in the game,
yeah,
that is better than we are,
yeah,
catching the ball at a height.
Eddie said on Monday night that the catch was Australia were kicking it to Folau, so why were we?
We surprisingly careless for this Irish team to do.
Yeah,
something
it
like
was. I think and Kurabeki, yeah, I never pronounced his name right. Yeah. He didn't really get peppered at all, and you would argue he's the weakest of the three.
That was strange
in the air. Yeah, I think just. Maybe not so much not planned, but not executed, I would have thought, given the pressure situations they were in.
So, in short, Keith, you think Ireland just?
Yeah, no, I think we win.
Okay, great. We'll talk next week. Thanks very much, Keith Wood on the line, Andy Dunn here in studio. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, Joe.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.